WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American Television. This program is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Monday, June 12th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Has the deep state finally cornered President Donald Trump? On Friday, the DOJ unveiled a 44-page federal indictment of the former president. No other former U.S. president has been hit with federal charges. The indictment levels the most serious allegations he's faced so far in the campaign to destroy him. If convicted on all 37 counts, he could spend the rest of his life in prison. Trump is charged by a grand jury with willfully having documents marked with national secrets, refusing to return them to the government, and conspiring to obstruct related investigations. The allegations are related to documents he kept in his Mar-a-Lago Palm Beach home, which Trump said he had declassified. The indictment alleges 31 violations of the Espionage Act. However, it doesn't accuse Trump of giving classified information to America's enemies, but it does accuse him of willfully mishandling documents, which falls under a provision of the Espionage Act titled Gathering, Transmitting, or Losing Defense Information. When the indictment was unveiled, Special Counsel Jack Smith had this to say.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with felony violations of our national security laws, as well as participating in a conspiracy to obstruct justice. This indictment was voted by a grand jury of citizens in the Southern District of Florida, and I invite everyone to read it in full to understand the scope and the gravity of the crimes charged. The men and women of the United States intelligence community and our armed forces dedicate their lives to protecting our nation and its people. Our laws that protect national defense information are critical to the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced. Violations of those laws put our country at risk.
Not surprisingly, liberal Democrats are jumping for joy. Ironically, among them is the profoundly corrupt Hillary Clinton. It's interesting how she decided to express her glee. The day the indictment was unsealed, Clinton tweeted, "Bringing this back in light of recent news, get a limited edition Butthurt emails hat and support Onward Together groups working to strengthen our democracy." But her emails refers to the government emails, many of them classified, that Hillary had on her private server when she was Secretary of State. She claims she did nothing wrong, but the fact that she had her private server wiped clean suggests otherwise. Clinton wasn't charged with any crimes for mishandling classified information. But the Clinton email scandal is just one example of the double standard that passes for justice at the Department of Justice. Joe Biden took documents with him after he left office as vice president. Some of the documents even dated back to his time in the U.S. Senate. And he kept the documents in several unsecure locations, including his garage next to his Corvette. Former Vice President Mike Pence also wound up holding on to classified documents. Yet, Clinton, Pence, and Biden, neither of these people were charged, and none of them had permission to declassify documents. Only Trump has been charged, yet he's the only one who could declassify documents as president. This obviously has nothing to do with equal application of the law. What's happening here is the regime in power is weaponizing the Justice Department against its chief political opponent, who it likely cannot defeat in a fair and honest election. Here's U.S. Senator Josh Hawley in a recent Fox interview making this very point.
If the president in power can just jail his political opponents, which is what Joe Biden is trying to do tonight, we don't have a republic anymore. We don't have the rule of law. We don't have the Constitution. Our Constitution is built on the basic rule of law and due process, and nobody should be in doubt of what's happening tonight. Joe Biden and his cronies are trying to take out their chief political opponent. This has never happened before in American history, Laura. We are in dangerous, dangerous waters, and it is because of Joe Biden.
But not because of Joe Biden alone. Biden, after all, like other presidents except Trump, is taking his cue from the deep state. The deep state hates Trump and tried to derail his first term in office with a now thoroughly discredited Russia-Trump collusion hoax. So, will the deep state and the Biden regime get Trump? Will they derail his presidential campaign? Will they put him in jail? Will they send a message to others who dare oppose the deep state that anyone doing so will be met with destruction? According to liberal law professor Alan Dershowitz, the indictment against Trump is weak overall, except for one page. Here's his analysis on Fox Business.
Well, I've read the indictment very carefully. There's only one page that has anything of substance to it. The stuff about moving boxes, and that's all covered by the Presidential Records Act. It's probably not criminal at all. The one page that's of concern, obviously, if it's true, is the tape recording that was made of a conversation ex-President Trump had with a writer who was writing a book about Meadows, and which he said, look, I have these documents, they're secret. I could have declassified them when I was president, but I didn't. And then either shows it to him or just shows him that he has it. And that was the basis for the most important charge under the Espionage Act. The rest of it, I think, can easily be defeated on legal and factual ground. This is the one that should be worrisome to the president. He may have an answer for it. He may be able to say, look, I was just showing off a little bit. I didn't really have them read the document. I just flashed them in front of their eyes to show them, look, I'm the former president, and what I'm telling you is true. These documents prove it.
In the same interview, Dershowitz also decried the Espionage Act, which was used in the past against free speech and is now being used against Trump.
Look, the espionage statute is one of the worst statutes on the book. It was passed by Woodrow Wilson in 1917 to imprison his political enemies and people who were opposed to the First World War. Every liberal in the last 100 years has been opposed to the Espionage Act because it doesn't deal with espionage. Mm. It deals with dissent. It deals with opposition to war. It deals with speech. And it's a horrible, horrible statute. But it does cover, by its terms, transmitting to anybody who's not authorized the contents of classified material. It doesn't require espionage, as the title of the statute would seem to imply. It doesn't require it be given to an enemy. It doesn't require that money be paid in exchange. Now, whether or not the law is that broad and can be construed that broadly, whether or not that's constitutional, after all, Trump has a constitutional right to have a conversation with somebody and to tell him about what he did in office. And if the statute is going to be applied to him, it has to be a narrow and constitutionally acceptable statute. So there's a lot to fight about, but I'm just telling you, it's the one paragraph, the one page that should cause concern by President Trump.
Roger Stone, who served as a campaign advisor for Trump during the 2016 presidential campaign, believes the indictment would not only fail to stop Trump, but that it will make him stronger than ever. Here's what he had to say on InfoWars.
And by the way, for those of you who think this may end his campaign for president, not a chance, not even a scintilla of a chance. He remains committed to taking this country back and making it great again. And he understands that this really isn't about him. It really isn't. It's about us. He's just in the way. So they have to take him out because they want to continue the downward spiral of America. And they know they can't win a free, fair, honest, transparent election. And the fact that they haven't stopped him yet with everything they've thrown at him just makes them more hysterical, makes them make mistakes. I think this is going to prove to a mistake. It's kind of like that which does not kill me makes me stronger. I think Donald Trump is going to emerge stronger than ever.
Joining me to discuss today's stories is executive senior editor of The New American, Steve Bonta. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Paul. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Speaking of whose take do you lean towards more? Stone's, Roger Stone's, or Dershowitz? They kind of have two different takes. I mean, what Dershowitz is explaining could be serious, huh?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, the old canard that it's that the way the law is structured now and the power that's given to prosecutors, it's possible to indict a ham sandwich. And that's pretty much that was mentioned a lot with the previous round of Trump indictments that emanated from Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the same thing play out. The Department of Justice now wields so much power, they could indict literally anybody at any time for anything. If they had a vendetta against you, Paul Dragoo, for some reason, they could delve into your life, and sooner or later they could find somewhere, somehow, something that you'd done that would warrant, you know, and then they would refer it to the local authority. That's the power that our system now seems to have. And if nothing else, these events serve to show just how precarious the republic is. If indeed, as was alluded to in one of your segments, if indeed we can still claim to have a republic. I mean, we seem to have moved into the sort of oligarchical republic phase.
Yeah. It's just become more obvious. I think many would argue that we've been in that phase for a while. But once Trump came along, it really brought the devils out, huh?
Well, and make no mistake about it. I think, you know, Roger Stone and some of these people are saying, oh, you know, the deep state just gets more hysterical. Or well, they're not hysterical. They're deadly serious. They will do anything, and now they're showing this. They're basically saying, watch us do whatever we want and get away with it. Oh, and pay no attention to the Hillary escapades and the Biden escapades, which we're going to talk about in the next segment, right? Don't worry about those. They're irrelevant because we say so, and we dare anyone out there to stop us. That's, in effect, the past that we've come to.
So do you think, obviously even the legal analysts differ, but what is your take? How serious can President Trump actually end up behind bars for good?
My prediction is he will end up behind bars.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they're not going to stop. And there's, you know, we've already seen, I mean, you know, not one to jump the gun or anything, but look how long it took the House to get the FBI to turn over one document. Okay, the FBI was created ostensibly by the House.
Yeah.
And it's come completely unmoored from its tethers. And the same is true writ large for the Department of Justice, obviously the CIA, that's been around for, you know, the entire security state apparatus, what we now like to call the deep state, is accountable to no one. And this is a crisis. It's hard to know where it will go, but Trump won't be able to stop it, ultimately. They're going to get rid of him. And there's no way that they're going to allow him to be elected president again. Okay, that's my prediction. I hate to be negative, but that's what we've seen. And we've said for years at the John Birch Society that the insiders, as we used to call them, concentrate all their power on controlling who gets into the White House and to a lesser extent, you know, controlling the outcome of key Senate elections. The main area where reform is still possible at the federal level is in the House of Representatives because there's so many.
Yeah.
And even there, with modern, 21st century technology, it's becoming more and more feasible to manipulate the outcome of targeted elections.
Yeah.
So we're in a very, very precarious state. We shouldn't, I don't want to sound too negative, but we shouldn't underestimate. I think the fact that last week, in addition to what's happening to the orange man, the skies over D.C. and New York literally turned orange, maybe as a portent to show people just
how dire
our situation is. I don't know.
Thanks, Steve. Well, on the other side of the break, we'll look at another huge story that broke the same day the Trump indictment did. And we'll consider if the indictment might have been unleashed the same day to distract us from the more important story of the Biden crime syndicate. We'll be right back.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it. But her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code END20, END20.
Welcome back. Let's look at our other huge story. The Biden crime family's bottomless sump of corruption, influence peddling, and betrayal continues to yield more damning evidence, which Biden's henchmen and the federal government are trying hard to suppress. On the very same day that the Justice Department announced its intent to indict former President Donald Trump, the FBI finally allowed the entire House Oversight Committee to look at the notorious FD 1023 document. The 1023 document alleges that a hostile power bribed then-Vice President Joe Biden to the tune of at least $5 million in exchange for policy concessions. Here's Florida Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna, a member of the Oversight Committee, describing what she saw.
So I actually stayed yesterday. As you know, we were in recess for a little bit, and I actually spoke with Chairman Comer. So subpoenas should be going out next week. But what I can say is absolutely just as we had speculated and had heard, that this goes back to when Joe Biden was the vice president, that, again, there was two separate transactions of $5 million, one to Joe Biden and one to his son, Hunter Biden. It is from Burisma. I can tell you that the source had met multiple times to get this information, that the FBI also in that document had redacted information that talked about an individual who has actual proof and whether it's emails, text messages, electronic correspondence to actually get that information. And what I'm hearing, Maria, what I'm seeing is this is absolutely grounds for impeachment. And isn't it ironic that the Biden administration, the corrupt DOJ and the FBI are accusing President Trump of exactly what Joe Biden is guilty of? And so it's in my opinion that this does change things a little bit, because as we know, right now we're coming up on the 2024 election cycle. But Maria, it's also important to note that they moved around the money the same way that they moved around the money for personal payments to Joe Biden's family. So remember those 20 shell corporations and companies? That's how I believe that they paid Joe Biden.
Is it coincidence that this came out the same day the DOJ unveiled the Trump indictment? Luna, like many others, doesn't think so. Here she is also discussing what the House plans to do about Joe Biden's alleged corruption.
On the same day, we have confirmation that there was a bribery scheme and Biden was paid off to make policy changes that Trump is indicted.
Correct. And it's even more important to know that, you know, the individual that came forward, I mean, I was speaking with Chairman Comer, you know, this is some very, very scary stuff, right? It is very possible, and I do believe now that we have to kind of be careful about the timelines that we're releasing here, because the individual is still an active source, an active human source, that is. And so we have to make sure that this person doesn't get hurt. And I think that it's very likely with the information that's been brought forward that that could happen. And so it's very likely that this president is going to be impeached. And by that, I mean Joe Biden. And rightfully so. I would be saying the same thing for if it was a Republican. If you're guilty of public corruption and selling out your position, you don't deserve to be in office.
So when would you expect that? What is the timing for an impeachment trial?
Well, I think it's really going to depend on how Speaker McCarthy chooses to move forward. But what I can tell you is we have more than enough evidence right now. I know, again, Chairman Comer is going to be sending out more subpoenas next week. And it was incredibly alarming, Maria, because in the actual document, the source is referring to the big guy and the confidential human informant. It understood that to be Joe Biden. And remember, that was the same term that was used in Hunter Biden's emails and the Hunter Biden laptop.
Biden, meanwhile, still feels confident enough to joke about it.
The bribery allegation, Congresswoman Nancy Mace says there's damning evidence in the FBI file that you sold out the country. Do you have a response to the congressional Republicans?
Where's the money? I'm joking.
Mr. President,
it's a bunch of malarkey.
And it turns out there are several more 1023 forms, according to newly revealed information in this document. This information comes from highly credible sources, and it all spells out more details of the Biden family's pay-to-play schemes involving adversarial foreign powers. Here's House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer.
The FBI allowed me and Jamie Raskin, my counterpart on the House Oversight Committee, to go in and look at it. I read it again, and I realized that there were two footnotes in there that referenced other 1023s. So, you know, this is going to turn out, I think, a lot like the suspicious activity reports that the Treasury cabinet had on the Bidens. There are a lot more of these than what the federal government wants to admit. And the question is, why hasn't the federal government done anything about it? I mean, we've already brought out, Trey, and you know, that the Biden family had 20 shell companies, that the sole purpose, it appears, for those shell companies was to launder money through six different banks, and the banks called it money laundering in the suspicious activity reports. They laundered money from foreign nationals and then transferred that money to nine different Biden family members. I mean, this is a serious crime that it appears the only entity in the world that's investigating it is the House Oversight Committee.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is confident that the House Oversight Committee will access those other 1023s this week. And she's also about to subpoena reams of new bank records.
But now we also know that there isn't just one 1023 form that the FBI possesses. There's multiple 1023 forms.
What?
And here's what, yeah, there's more.
Oh my God. When are we gonna get our hands on those? Or are you gonna get your hands on those?
Next week. And this is why I want to tell you, in what seems like an extremely dark day and where we are appalled, infuriated, disgusted, and just outraged over the hypocrisy of Merrick Garland bringing charges and Jack Smith bringing charges against President Trump for this document hoax. And you're right. It's today for a reason. On this 1023 form, it references two more 1023 forms. And so our oversight committee was able to read the first one today. But next week, Chairman Comer and, of course, Congressman Raskin get to go in and look at two more 1023 forms. And tomorrow, subpoenas go out for more banks related to Ukraine bank accounts and wire transfers.
According to Comer and others, the FBI's informant claims that the Bidens laundered the money through so many different banks that it would take investigators at least 10 years to figure out the trail. At this point, it seems that every thread House investigators pull brings to light more and more evidence, most of which the FBI has known about for years and which appears to have been intentionally buried. The fact that this was going on all through the Trump administration, right up to the present day, shows just how thoroughly corrupt the FBI has become. This is, after all, the same institution that has been pursuing Trump with a vengeance since at least 2016 on the flimsiest of pretexts, all the while maintaining a see no evil attitude toward Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and the strong evidence pointing to criminal and corrupt conduct on the part of both. Wow, Steve. Who was it that said scary stuff? We got happy talk from MTG, but I mean, this is pretty damning stuff, and it looks like it could tear the country apart, right? I mean, this is all one big story.
It's one big story, and it's very clear to anyone with 20/20 eyesight what's going on, even less than 20/20. Neither you nor I have that anymore.
One good eye will do.
It's clear to us. What's going on? So on the one hand, there's this mad rush to get Trump in jail as quickly as possible, and perhaps more. And on the other hand, and now that there's clearly an urgency on the part of the deep state because they're racing against time. Obviously the FBI was successful in slow walking the release of the first FD-1023,
sure,
but now they seem to have capitulated. And you heard it from the horse's mouth. They are planning to impeach Joe Biden over this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether he would be removed from office is less of a point. The concern that the deep state has right now is, well, if he gets impeached, whether or not he's ultimately removed from office, which he probably won't, that's never happened
right. In
an impeachment case. But, the Democrats will never give up on him. They're as relentlessly partisan with him as they were a generation ago with Bill Clinton. And so I don't expect to see things change. But the point is that would taint him and make him even less reelectable than he is now. So this is a problem. So now what are they going to do? They're going to have to look towards a Gavin Newsom or some other knight in a white charger to come forth and salvage their chances of keeping. Because even if they put Trump in jail, then likely DeSantis or someone else will come to the fore. And, it's just a mess.
Well, I was thinking about that while you were talking too. Is this also a message to someone who, like DeSantis, who perhaps has also shown some cojones standing up to the big state, to the deep state?
Well, sure, it's a message to anyone. And obviously, you know, it can't be repeated often enough if they can do it to Trump with his profile, with his assets, with his support, and on the flimsiest of pretexts, they can do it literally to anybody. Now, I've lived in police states, several police states. I know what it's like to live in a state where, in a country where you're in constant, there's this constant lingering fear in the back of your mind that you might get stopped by some guy with a submachine gun and have your papers asked for, and you might end up getting caught up in some dragnet and whisked off to jail or interrogated. I've been interrogated on suspicions of espionage in one particular police state that I lived in. So this idea that people have that unless it's 1984, Oceania, you know, it's not a police state, is false. A police state, by definition, is a state where the government can engage in what we're now calling lawfare without really any limits, without anything stopping them.
And that's your opinion. That's what we're seeing.
And we're seeing that now. And not just against Trump, obviously, people who support him, and obviously as well, and we've talked about this before, parents who become too obstreperous at school board meetings and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
So
we're getting there.
We're getting to the point where the moniker police state is not so much of an exaggeration anymore. It's a concern. That said, so as not to end on a negative note, which we kind of did in the first segment, in contrast to what's going on with Trump, Congress is and remains the key, and the mere fact that these investigations are being prosecuted by these dogged members of the House, I think is cause for some optimism. And we're certainly, if nothing else, the truth is coming out. And if the Bidens are not held to account for this in some form, then there is no justice left in the United States.
That's a good point. I mean, wherever we go from here, we know that the people will know for the most part, I would think. Thanks, Steve. That's all for our news segment today, folks. For more truth behind the news, make sure to get a subscription to the New American Magazine. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com, or you can call our office at 800-727-8783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. And stay tuned, because we'll be right back with more New American TV.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board. And I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack. And because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
The establishment opinion cartel has claimed again and again that Donald Trump colluded with Russia. However, even though this turned out to be false, there was Russian collusion. But the collusion was with Hillary Clinton, not Donald Trump. That's the subject of our cover story, Durham Report Reveals the Real Collusion, in the June 26th issue of the New American Magazine. And the author of that piece, investigative journalist R. Court Kirkwood, is interviewed here on Beyond the Cover. Let's watch.
During the entire period of the Trump presidency and beyond, the establishment opinion cartel accused President Trump of colluding with Russia. But in reality, there was a collusion. It was not Trump. It was Hillary Clinton. Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit. And today we have with us R. Court Kirkwood. Court, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
Well, and thank you for joining us. And of course, you have in the past from a remote location, but today you're in our studios at the John Birch Society and the New American Magazine.
All right, coming to you live.
Coming to us live, which is tremendous. And of course, you have a lot of experience with journalism. You were a newspaper man, I believe, for 25 years.
Yeah, well, yes, I was the managing editor of Daily Newspaper for 18 years, and before that, I ran several other publications. So over the long haul, probably a newspaper editor, for about a quarter century.
Well, you know how to sniff out a good story, so to speak, and
yes.
You certainly have done so. with the cover story that you wrote for the June 25 issue of the New American Magazine. And the title of your article is Durham Report Reveals the Real Collusion.
Correct.
And, of course, we show on the cover of that magazine not Donald Trump, because that's not the real collusion. We show Hillary Clinton. So tell us about it.
Well, you know, for 4 years, the Trump, President Trump, was accused of colluding with Russia to win the presidency from Hillary Clinton. And that accusation began with some information from foreign diplomats that the FBI took and opened a crossfire hurricane investigation that became the Russia collusion investigation. At the same time, or about the same time, Hillary Clinton's campaign began hooking up falsehoods that Trump was connected to a Russian bank, that he was using cell phone, this would have been later on, but he had used cell phones outside the White House that were Russian cell phones. And then, of course, there was a Steele dossier that the Clinton campaign paid for through a cutout. And where the Clinton-Russia collusion comes in is the sources for the Steele dossier, who were Russian, a couple of them. So that's why that was the real collusion. At the end, and what the Durham report shows is there was never any evidence that that Trump colluded with the Russians, yet the FBI proceeded. The Clinton campaign spread these allegations. I'm sure they knew they were false because they were the ones making it up. But,
well, they weren't interested in truth.
Yes. So that's kind of the story in a nutshell.
Right. Now, I would assume that most Americans have not read the Durham report, but obviously you put that under a microscope because that was a chief source for you. And a lot of the information you already were familiar with because you've been studying this for years.
Yes.
But tell us about the Durham report. Was it pretty convincing?
The Durham report is the package that came out of his investigation, which led to two unsuccessful prosecutions of two principals involved in the collusion scandal. And they were both acquitted. One was Michael Sussman, who was a Clinton torpedo. And the other was his name escapes him right there. It's right in the magazine if you want to look it up. He also was acquitted. Mm-hmm. They were both accused of lying to the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
So they were both acquitted. Now, what the report shows is that the extent to which the FBI proceeded with this, despite having no evidence, despite not doing due diligence before they launched this major investigation, despite not doing many things that they should have and probably normally would have done with any other investigation. And then it shows the extent to which Clinton pushed these allegations to the FBI and to the media.
It certainly was not what you would call nonpartisan. Justice was not blind.
Well, no, it wasn't blind. I mean, I don't know how these two gentlemen were acquitted of lying to the FBI. It seemed pretty obvious that Durham had an iron...
The evidence.
Yeah, I mean, Durham had an ironclad case. I mean, he had emails from Sussman to the general counsel of the FBI.
I wonder if you could look at that as a form of jury nullification, which can be a good thing. But it can also be a bad thing, too, which obviously was in this instance.
Well, I guess, you could look at it as jury nullification. But remember, you're in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Two of the jurors were did not like Trump. And the judge himself has a link over into the collusion investigation from another angle. And that is, I think his wife was the attorney for one of the principals in the... in the case. So, you know, it's very obvious if you read this 309-page report or 300, however long it was, if you read this 300-long report, I mean, it's detailed. There's, well, I don't know how many, I guess 1,100 footnotes.
Mm-hmm.
And you read this very, very carefully, and it's very, very clear that the FBI, a judgment I'm making from looking at the report. The report does not say this. It's very clear to me that the FBI was serving as something of a arm of the Clinton campaign.
Right.
Because we had people inside the FBI who did not want Trump to be president and said, we're going to make sure he doesn't become president.
It's probably not an overstatement to say that the FBI has been, or at least is being, weaponized against the American people. It's not the FBI it used to be.
Well, it's not the FBI that Jimmy Stewart showed us in the movie.
Right.
I mean, this is not, you know, the middle American guy who, you know, is out to hunt communists and, you know, foil Nazi plots. I mean, these agents involved in this were targeting an American citizen, a presidential candidate, and they falsified information to get a warrant to conduct electronic surveillance on one of Trump's campaign aides.
Which obviously is engaging in criminal activity. And the people who are engaging in criminality are the people who wear the badge.
Yeah, I mean, the warrants were gotten under false pretense.
Right.
And that itself is very, very problematic.
Yes.
I mean, forgetting about the fact that they abused the law to get the warrants, you know, they illegally wiretapped an American citizen.
Right. Which is a violation of the Constitution.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very obvious that this whole operation, if you look, read the report very closely, the only conclusion that you can draw is that the FBI, certain FBI agents had to have been colluding with Clinton. They didn't do any due diligence when they started the investigation. They were taking these allegations, you know, hook, line, and sinker from Clinton's people. You know, the Steele dossier, which was ridiculous on its face, became a major part of this. And then we had the media, you know, piling on, and it occupied Trump's presidency for all 4 years.
Why not?
And now we see that it's over, and nobody's gonna be punished. Nobody's gonna.
Which of course means you can expect it to happen again and again and again if these things go unpunished.
Yes. Now, one thing you have to remember about the Durham report, by the way, which I had forgotten to mention, is that, you know, it draws a lot of its material from the original FBI internal investigation. So that's something of an interesting angle is because the FBI itself found that this thing was polluted and corrupt.
Sure, but the whole thing was covered up. At least until
the FBI's own investigation of what occurred.
Sure.
And here's the other interesting aspect of this that if you read the report very, very closely, is that the top FBI people that were pushing this did not let lower agents who were part of this Crossfire Hurricane investigation know who some of the sources of these allegations were. So they never could evaluate them. And there's a line in the report that says one of the agents, when they were being interviewed, they said that they were so upset that they left the room.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came back, you know, Durham said, well, you know, the information we just gave you, I mean, we haven't proven this beyond a shadow of a doubt. He said, it doesn't matter. I should have known about this. I should have known who the source of this information was. How can I evaluate it? So
they,
you know, the top FBI officials were hiding information from the lower officials.
Yes.
Which itself is I don't know if it's against the law, but it's certainly improper, illicit, and probably, I mean, if their lawyers doing this, that means it's unethical.
Well, of course, there is such a thing as crooked lawyers.
Yeah,
I mean, there's all sorts of things going on.
There's illicit activities. There's unethical legal behavior. Mm-hmm. There's illegal behavior. There's wiretaps that they shouldn't have gotten. I mean, this is the stuff that we were supposed to have stopped, you know, with the Church Committee and all the attacks on the FBI back in the 70s, as you recall.
Right.
This isn't supposed to happen again. But when you have what you had in the FBI, which is this polarized department, it'd be very interesting to find out how FBI agents in the field who are not part of this massive bureaucracy in the sense that they don't work at the FBI headquarters every day, how they felt about this.
Well, I think that's why we have whistleblowers, and some of them dare to come forward.
I think that I think that's where you're going to find these the normal Americans that, you know, that feel they join the FBI because they want to, you know, they want to serve their country and they want to do, you know, they want to do good. And, but I don't think when they join the FBI, they expected this.
No, they don't. I'd like to recount a story, Court, about Dan Smoot, a name a lot of people would not recognize today. He died a few years ago. But Dan Smoot was a, he was an FBI agent back roughly in the middle part of the 20th century. And he would go out in the field. And by the way, Dan Smoot has a connection to the John Birch Society because after he was an FBI agent, he became somebody who did a newsletter. He had a broadcast that he did, which basically reflected the views of the John Birch Society. And he also wrote for the Review of the News, which was a precursor publication to the New American Magazine. But Dan Smoot recounted this story from when he was an FBI agent about how they were after one of the bad guys, so to speak. And in order to capture him, they went to this very remote location somewhere in the desert in the southwestern part of the United States. And there was a cabin there, or basically a shack. And so he was with other FBI agents, but they were waiting for their prey to show up at this remote location. Because with the intelligence that they had, they knew that he would show up at a certain time, and he did, and they were able to capture him. And what Dan Smoot said about that was the extraordinary power, law enforcement capabilities that the FBI possessed at that time, and how horrible it would be if those powers that at that time were being used for good in the wrong hands could be used for bad. And I think we see that happening today.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you are seeing that today. And imagine now, speaking of that same power, imagine how that power has been intensified and augmented and fortified by modern technology.
Yes.
Emails, cell phones, you know, drones. You are. It's almost impossible to go anywhere now without being seen. By something.
I think it goes beyond what George Orwell imagined in his famous novel, 1984.
Well, yes. I mean, if you go back, there was a television program on years ago called 24, and it was about this counterterrorism unit that the government ran. And, you know, Stalin would have drooled at the powers that this agency had. You know, these cameras everywhere, and no matter where a bad guy went, they could watch him on a screen and surveil him and track his phones, and remarkable technology. Now, in the show, they're catching bad guys.
Right.
But what about a good guy? In this case, you know, you had this Trump campaign official being watched.
Yeah, and to use the power of the FBI to bring down a president of the United States, or at least to tie him up to such an extent where he can't fully perform his duties, that is quite an abuse of power.
Well, yes, it's a coup d'etat. That's what Dershowitz called it.
Yes,
when you have two FBI agents texting each other or emailing, whatever they were doing. Saying, yeah, he's not going to become president. We're not going to allow that. Who's we?
Right. Court, one final question.
Yes.
What can we do about this? And specifically, what can the average American do about this in order to regain control of his own government?
Well, one thing you can do is keep track of these types of stories. You know, read the New American. You know, you can't do anything about it if you don't know anything about it.
Good point.
And this means you have to go beyond watching Fox News or watching, you know, the left-wing mainstream media's treatment of these stories. And, you know, go read the Durham report. You know, go read the court records on the Sussman trial and look at what occurred. Don't just rely on this filter. And it doesn't matter, even in a conservative publication, you know, don't necessarily rely on all the filters. You know, if you read the piece in a New American, do yourself a favor, go up online, go to doj.gov and look up the indictment, read the thing, take a couple of days and skim through it. It's remarkable what's in this Durham report. and the way it lays it out. It's quite a document.
It surely is. And then, of course, it's important, too, to apply that information and to, let's say, hold the feet of your congressman and your senators to the fire and to wake up your neighbors as well.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Court.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
Who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand when necessary.
And to complete today's program, Gary Benoit interviews Steve Bonta for another episode of Principles. Today's principle: there are two principal strategies for governance, rule by force or rule of law. Let's watch.
Hello, everybody. This is Gary Benoit, and with me today is Steve Bonta, the executive senior editor of the New American Magazine. And Steve, you are, of course, here so we can discuss another basic principle.
Okay. Well, so the last time we talked about two principal types of government, speaking in the most general possible terms, one being government by rulers over the ruled, and the other being government by the people themselves over themselves, through one way. And we kind of left it at that, although we're going to elaborate on that. But now we want to talk about two different strategies for government, two different ways in which the task of governance is accomplished.
You might say two different types of government.
Well, I suppose we already said that with the other, right? So this is two different ways by which either government by rulers or government by the people can be accomplished. So one is government by, we would say, rule by force. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the other is rule of law. Not rule by law, by the way. Rule by law is just another way of saying rule by force. But we'll get to that in a minute. So what is the difference? And by the way, you know, people might assume, well, rule by force is the same as government by rulers. Not necessarily, because there are such things as constitutional monarchies, where you have a ruler rather than government by the people, but there's a clear, well-defined set of laws that the ruler himself or herself must also be obliged to. So these two approaches to understanding government are not exactly the same thing. So what is rule by force? Well, every child knows what that is, right? So every child has been in the situation of having to ask the question, why do I have to do this? For example, I don't want to take a bath. Why do I have to? I don't want to go to bed right now. Why? And what do most parents typically say? Exasperated at the end of the day, because I said so. And that's really what rule by force is, because I said so. It's the parental approach to rule. It's the same way that, you know, parents govern the behavior of very little children who really, you know, you can't reason with them. Some would argue you can't even do that with older children. But anyway, you can't reason and say, well, honey, the reason you need to go to bed early is because your body has certain requirements and so forth. So you can try. Good luck with that with a toddler. So it comes down to, because I said so, and if the child starts kicking up a fuss, you physically pick the child up and you take the child in the room and you put him to bed and that kind of thing. So this is a concept that this is how we were all governed when we were little children to some extent. And really, rule by force, whether it's a tyrant, a monarch, a military dictator, a junta, an oligarchy, a group of people who essentially rule by force or rule by whim, it amounts to the same thing. It's basically the simplistic way of ruling over children as though over people as though they were little children, or as though they were animals in the field who understand nothing more than the crack of its owner's lash or something like that.
Yeah, so that's, as if they didn't possess any rights.
That, as if they possess no rights.
Transcended the ruler.
Yeah, and no capacity to reason or anything else.
Right.
So that's rule by force, or we could say rule by decree or rule by whim. There are various ways
to
couch
that. Some people
might
even say rule by law, but there's a huge difference between rule by law and rule of law. And I did notice that you said rule of law is being the alternative to rule by force.
So well, because if you have any kind of extended state with you know, you need to have complex organizations. So mm-hmm. instead of the king, even an absolute dictator can't be everywhere at all times, ordering everyone the way a child does, a parent does a recalcitrant child. So mm-hmm. he has to write laws, or we would call them edicts or ukases or something like that, that have the force of an absolute command that can't be questioned. And it can't be reasoned about. You just do it, and so it amounts to the same thing. And interestingly, I heard I forget the source, but apparently not long ago, there was a discussion between some people in the United States and some people in China about this very issue of rule of law, and our people were trying to explain. Well, in the West, we believe in this thing called rule of law, and the immediate Chinese response was, well, we have that too. Of course, what they meant was rule by law, meaning that the Communist Party or the leadership of the Communist Party will issue a directive and it must be executed. And you don't get to question it. So that's the difference. Now, rule of law, by contrast, which can apply in monarchies as well as in popular governments, republics, as we're going to talk about that in another installment, means in effect that there are a set of laws, and they are based on, first of all, they're based on timeless principles of human morality. That's important.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. they certainly should be.
Yeah. Rule of law in a moral mm-hmm. vacuum is really no better than tyranny. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that the laws by which you are ruling are just. All right. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily, it means that they apply uniformly or almost uniformly. There can be exceptions. For example, children don't have the same rights under laws as adults, that kind of thing. But as a general principle, the laws should apply equally to everybody.
And that would include the rulers, too.
Absolutely. And crucially, they apply to the rulers and the extended ruling class and all of the elites and all the wealthy and all of the people who are naturally advantaged by their innate abilities, by accident of birth, and so forth, right?
Right.
So the ideal is, particularly in a republic such as we have, is to have rule, is to have rule of law in which that's observed. Now, one of the things that, in our news segment that we are just so concerned about now is the increasingly glaring evidence that we really don't have rule of law anymore in the United States.
Well, what we have today is the law is whatever the ruler or the dictator or the tyrant says it is. And, of course, that's not rule of law whatsoever. That's rule by law.
Well, we've reached such a pass where we're violating both of the principles, the conditions for rule of law. Number one is the law doesn't apply equally to everyone. There are clearly, just yesterday, as we make this mm-hmm. recording, it was announced that President Trump has been indicted by a whole bunch of stuff by the Department of Justice for the exact same thing that Joe Biden has done, concealing classified documents. But they've had, they've resorted to all sorts of legal artifices to make it look like, well, yeah, but Trump's really the bad guy here, and Biden, it was an innocent mistake. But it doesn't stop there. I mean, if you look at all of the activities of the Department of Justice under the current administration, mm-hmm. they're all directed at Republicans. They're all directed at people who are Trump sympathizers, and nary a one is directed toward a Democrat. Not just Joe Biden, but Hillary Clinton, and obviously all of, Mayorkas and all these other people that are being threatened with impeachment and so forth. The Department of Justice wants nothing to do with it. They've closed ranks around their own on a partisan basis, and this differs not a whit from oligarchies and monarchies of other ages where whoever the so-called court faction, to use Edmund Burke's term.
Well, the law has been weaponized. That would be one way of putting it. Another way of putting it would be to say that the law is arbitrary. In other words, it's not applied the same way to everybody, but the law is just completely arbitrary. Again, it's whatever the tyrant says. And of course, that's a hallmark of tyranny.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's not entirely arbitrary. It's being enforced with great zeal and consistency on one side and completely neglected on the other.
But arbitrary in a sense that the law is whatever the tyrant says it is.
Sure.
You could compare that, let's say, to 1984 with the formula or the simple statement that 2 + 2 = 4. And in 1984, in that dystopian world, 2 + 2 might equal 4, but it might equal 5, might equal something else entirely. It might equal 4 one day, but 3 the other day. It is whatever the despotism says it is.
Well, and Orwell perceived correctly that once you vitiate in the popular mind the notion of law as being, as they say, lex rex, that the law is king, that the law rules over all, that doesn't stop in the political and jurisprudential realm. It eventually extends into science and mathematics and logic and all the rest of it. And we're seeing that happen right now, where the notion of the rule of law has been so thoroughly discredited that even what we once thought as an absolutely unassailable Empirian science as mathematics, you know, based on pure logic, logic of forms and all this type of thing, has been vitiated and turned into something that needs to be politicized. Certainly this process is far advanced in all of the other sciences, including the queen of sciences, physics itself, not to mention the humanities and so forth. Everywhere you turn, the same conceit is taking over, namely that there is no such thing as an absolute standard of law, an ideal towards which we're trying to attain in whatever our discipline happens to be, but instead that everything is malleable. Everything is changeable. It depends on your perspective. It depends on the narrative. It depends on your race, your cultural biases, and so forth and so on.
We ended up with an elastic constitution.
Well, right, sure.
Based on that.
Yeah, and I mean, the beginning of that was was the early insistence that, well, the Constitution is really this living, breathing document subject to arbitrary reinterpretation according to the whims of whatever current, you know, cultural fads happen to be out there.
Which is the same way of saying there is no Constitution.
Right, and now, and we've gone from that relatively, you know, narrow domain to this entire new cultural paradigm, or I would say anti-cultural paradigm, where we just say, in effect, you know, there is no law. There is no ultimate standard of anything. It's whatever we want it to be. And this is why, you know, reason, we've come as a culture completely unmoored from reason.
I agree with you. But the good news, Steve, is that we still have our Constitution, and all we have to do is get back to it to rescue the freedoms that are now being threatened and destroyed. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you for joining us today. And remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. We'll see you tomorrow for another episode of The New American TV.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At The New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but The New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.